I'd like to propose a toast.
Hello and welcome to Before Brunch. I'm Megan Cassidy.
And I'm Cassie Delaney.
And we are your weekly celebrity, pop culture, current affairs and lifestyle podcast. We go live every Sunday morning. I can't remember what time we go live at.
10 a.m.-ish.
Was it 10?
Ish.
And we talk about everything that you used to talk to your friends about at brunch.
Yeah. And we've come out of retirement to talk about Britney Spears.
I mean, it's as if the fates aligned, because I'm proud of us that we're here at the desk.
It's taken a while.
Recording.
Yeah.
Because it's taken, when did we wrap? We wrapped at the end of 2018. We did our live show in November of 2018.
That was the last one?
Yes.
So we haven't recorded in 2 years. We have recorded together on other projects, but we haven't recorded before.
Oh, true. Yes. We haven't been both on the mic on those other projects.
No.
But yeah, we haven't recorded since November 2018, and we've constantly talked about bringing it back. But it was maybe me being too kind of corporate about it, and like, let's have a meeting and let's talk about changing the format. I love meetings, and then, but I'm also
but
the biggest
fake. A lot of things changed in those 2 years. You were running a media company.
Yeah.
You were at the helm. You were very busy.
I was overwhelmed and busy.
Yeah, I was overwhelmed. I started really getting into Tall Tales. It's now year 3 of business. We have employees. It's mad.
God, so much has changed.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think what worked was one of the listeners, Lisa Nolan, DM'd us and was like, you have to talk about Britney. And that
Lisa's defense now has DM'd us many times over the last 2 years and said, guys, please bring back Before Brunch. And we're like, Lisa, this Sunday, we promise.
It's like the can that's never endingly kicked down the road. Because, you know, you build these things up in your head. You're like, I don't know if I can do Before Brunch anymore. I don't know if I can talk like that anymore. Or, you know, but I can talk about Britney.
Where were you when Hit Me Baby One More Time came out?
I love that you asked me that, because I was telling my other half while watching Framing Britney Spears that I remember so vividly where I was. I think everyone does.
Yeah.
I was in my living room before school. And the video came on MTV, and I have no kind of memory of any other music video that stuck with me the way the Baby One More Time video.
Maybe later on in life, Avril Lavigne, Complicated.
Okay.
Hit Me Baby One More Time, like, influenced our music choices. It influenced like the people we were and what we listened to and what we enjoyed. And like that year at the community talent show, everyone was Britney Spears.
Yes, that is exactly what's so uncomfortable about this, is that it isn't just, we didn't just accept the way she was treated. It actually shaped who we are, because we were in developmental years when that came out. So it's not just that we kind of turned a blind eye. It actually probably shaped belief systems that are very difficult to unlearn and unwire.
Completely. Yeah, absolutely. So I suppose what we're talking about really is obviously, the Framing Britney Spears documentary came out this week or the week before last, but a lot of Irish people have been able to access it this week. The story we already knew was that Britney Spears was at the height of her fame, was America's sweetheart, was portrayed as this super innocent, gorgeous girl, virgin, just the perfect woman, perfect young girl, saving herself for marriage, had this amazing all-American dream romance with Justin Timberlake. And then we saw her decline, and the decline came after she had her kids. So she had her kids pre-2007. So the breakup with JT, the rumors that she wasn't a virgin, just her image being kind of like slowly eroded in media. And then she met Kevin Federline very quickly, had 2 kids very close together. And then it became her inability to mother or parent those kids, that she was still partying, seen out, photographed with all the party girls at the time, Paris Hilton, Lindsay Lohan and the likes. Which was interesting to see as well. Like, there was a point in the documentary where they're going through magazine covers, and like Britney's, say, the focal point of the magazine cover, but in the corner you're seeing something about Nicole Richie's drinking, you're seeing something about Paris Hilton's, you know, behavior, Amanda Bynes, Lindsay Lohan, all these women who were very famous at the time, and the way that they were portrayed as, you know, for want of a better term, crazy, like, and not in need of help, but that they were self-destructive. And so we all knew that and obviously then the kind of Britney's story, the pinnacle of Britney's story was her breakdown in 2007, where we have those images of her shaving her head and then breaking the window of a paparazzi car with an umbrella. So we knew the story, but to see it so succinctly put together and see the media coverage, her discomfort in multiple interviews, the way men speak to her and about her to her face, and then it just feels like the breakdown was inevitable.
Yeah.
And then the treatment of her afterwards, because obviously the kind of contentious thing at the moment is that she's involved in a conservatorship where her father controls her estate and her decisions as a person.
Yeah. I think you've hit the nail on the head, and what was most alarming about watching the documentary is exactly that it all seemed so inevitable.
Yeah.
And that there was no new information in this documentary. I'm a Britney super fan, even though this documentary made me question what being a fan is, but I'll come back to that. There was no new information here. With the Paris Hilton documentary, for example, there was really stunning revelations about things that happened in her past and traumatic experiences she went through. And we could all kind of hop on social media and say, God, I never knew. And maybe that is why some of her behavior that was ridiculed so much, maybe that's why it happened.
Yeah.
But there's nothing new in
Framing Britney. But I think that like both the documentaries present, and this is what I suppose it may be a concerning thing, is that they both sort of present explanations for their behavior. So Paris's treatment of what she went through, going through kind of a reform school type scenario, where she reports being abused and, you know, forced into labor and all that kind of stuff, explains then her reluctance to settle down, her kind of drive and her ambition and her real, I suppose she's really motivated by being incredibly independent and not having to ever be reliant on someone. And, you know, then you watch it and you're like, oh yeah, okay, well that, I understand why, you know, X plus Y equals Z. And then with Britney, I suppose it's her treatment of the media and a lot of like the misogyny around her career and the culture of misogyny that we lived in that led to this sort of breakdown or this episode. I don't think that we need, and I think with mental illness, there doesn't need to be an explanation a lot of the time. Like I almost wish they'd been like, yes, all this happened to Britney, but independently of that, Britney is also an unwell person.
Yeah, and I actually think, in fairness to Framing Britney Spears, that it doesn't try to make it, you know, that this is the reason that Britney had a breakdown. It's more, look at the way this woman was treated from day one, before there were any queries about mental health. Look at the treatment. How did we all accept that? And now watching it again, it's this moment of clarity. And it's hard sometimes to, and I wrote about this in Rogue this week, it's hard sometimes to see the wood from the trees, like when you think about all the tiny actions we make to move things forward and not accept sexism and not accept, they're all tiny actions that happen in mundane settings and feel difficult and then feel pointless afterwards. But collectively they've now created this moment where we can actually look back and very definitively say, we've overthrown a complete mindset.
But so, I think a lot of it comes down to who's framing, and this is maybe why the documentary is called Framing Britney Spears. It's who controlled the narrative of the story at the time. And if you examine the media and who, the tabloids and stuff, you're going to find that they're, and still with media to this day, it's male dominated, male owned. There is generally male editors at the helm telling people what women want to read, what women want to consume. I know we've talked about this before and before Bunch, you know, 10 and a half years ago. I think that's a real problem. And what we're seeing now is a natural change in opinion and in how things are presented, because we have more women voices at a senior level in media. The documentary itself was put together by two women, which I think is a really interesting perspective.
Yeah, Samantha Stark, I think, directed it for the New York Times. And she says that the purpose of the piece and the goal of the piece is to confront us with what we accepted and our own complicity. And we've spoken a lot on Before Brunch about the whole celebrity ecosystem and how we all play a part. And it's very hard to find someone to blame. There are people that are more at fault than others. Jamie Spears, her father, who's currently her conservator and, you know, has full control over her financial affairs, no longer her personal affairs. That was stripped from him in 2019, but she still doesn't have control of her personal affairs. So is it Jamie Spears' fault? Is it Justin Timberlake's fault? Or was it a case of of supply and demand at the time. We raised up that kind of behavior. We launched Justin Timberlake's solo career off the back of his shaming of Britney Spears. There's a reason that he is the one from NSYNC. We've talked before about who the one is from the band. Justin was the one because of Britney and Justin.
Yeah.
And he repeatedly shamed her. And me as a fan, because, and this is what I meant about what is a fan. When you're a fan and you're younger, you just want to consume any paraphernalia that has to do with the person, whether it's in their best interests or not. When Cry Me a River came out, I just bought the single. It never occurred to me that maybe this is unfair on Britney Spears.
Yeah.
The documentary shows Diane Sawyer take a really cruel line of questioning with Britney, accusing her of breaking Justin's heart, saying that there's a parent that wants to shoot her because she's such a bad example for her children. And it just wasn't the age of Twitter. It wasn't the age where you could cancel Diane Sawyer. We were in an echo chamber.
Yeah.
Diane Sawyer was the only voice we heard, and that's how we shaped our value systems. So, you know, there is no one to blame, but we're all complicit. Another moment that really stands out for me in the documentary is the paparazzo. His name is Daniel Ramos.
This is the paparazzi who's actually driving the car
that Britney attacked with an umbrella.
Yeah.
And he explains a little bit about the paparazzi culture, and people call it the tabloid culture. I always call it the paparazzi culture because that's the image that's just so standout. But he explained that, you know, his dream was to become a photographer. He didn't dream of chasing a celebrity around
Los
Angeles.
But he was getting paid up to $1 million a picture.
But if he... Yes, and if he is saying that a magazine commands a 7-figure sum for a photo of Britney Spears, he's going to get that to change his family's life. He's going to try and get the shot. It's not right, and obviously the right thing to do is not get the shot, but it just shows that he's a part, one of the parts that constitutes an entire ecosystem, and we're in that ecosystem too. We consume the magazine. We assign value to the picture.
Yeah.
I remember the first big shock in Britney's trajectory was actually when she married Jason Alexander. Remember, she married him for maybe 2 days and it was annulled immediately.
I've actually completely forgotten that.
That was the first one. And it was the first time that obviously she incrementally broke away from that innocent baby one more time persona. The Rolling Stone cover was one milestone. You know, even in Sometimes, it was speculated that she'd had a boob job. It was only her second single and people were already saying that she had changed too much.
Yeah.
But Jason Alexander was the first one where she appeared in Vegas with ripped jeans and a hat and she looked really sad. And I remember just not being even remotely disturbed by it or sad for her or thinking maybe something needs to change. It was just so entertaining.
Yeah.
And that is just so
But we
wrong.
Didn't have an understanding of, I suppose, okay, when we were consuming Britney Spears as well, like we were incredibly young. We were early teens.
Yeah.
I was slightly younger than you were. But we didn't have an understanding of female mental illness at all to really examine it and critique it and examine her treatment. It was just this chaotic character. And actually in the documentary they do reference that Britney was the first big female pop star. Like, it was all about boy bands. It was Boyzone, NSYNC, and then we had Britney Spears. I know we had Spice Girls as well, but like Britney was this other entity altogether.
Yeah.
And to see her, it was just so bizarre to see her downfall and her fall from grace, and that became almost that became the entertainment.
Yeah.
More than the content she was creating and putting out, the entertainment was her story and what she was doing and what she was going to do next. And then examining, you know, obviously it's ridiculous to think of it now, but seeing snippets of her life and using that as information that she can't parent her children, or seeing like a one photograph, which is even 1/250th of a second.
Yeah.
And saying that this is evidence that she's inept.
Yeah. And what we have to remember is that Britney was actually a guinea pig in a way. She was the first celebrity of her kind, and she came up, as the documentary points out, just in the wake of the Monica Lewinsky, Bill Clinton drama. And we weren't used to, we certainly didn't have the access to celebrity that we have now with social media and things like Behind the Scenes or The Making Of or The Diary Of. Those MTV shows were as close as we got to any sort of depiction of the celebrity as a real person. So she's the first of her kind. We know now, because we have more open discussions about mental health, that fame at a very early age can definitely aggravate or cause emotional distress that is dealt with later in life. Britney was part of a reality show when she was 10 called Star Search, that was broadcast nationally in the States, and then went on to be a Mickey Mouse Club member with Justin Timberlake and Christina and Ryan Gosling when she was in her developmental years, then catapulted straight to Baby One More Time at 15. And has been the most famous person in the world, maybe, arguably, since then.
Absolutely, yeah.
She's never had any time to step back and separate herself from the product or the celebrity. Whereas celebrities that have come after her, Beyonce is a great example. Now that we know that this can be very trialing on your mental health, people are developing processes and mental models to help them cope with their fame. And the Beyonce uses her alter ego, Sasha Fierce, and has said, this is how I process my shyness. Mm-hmm. The difference between Beyonce and the performer, I created this alter ego, Sasha Fierce, in order to cope with that. Kobe Bryant created the Black Mamba to distance himself from the public criticism, the effect of trolling that he had. People are now coming up with mental models in order to alter the way they see their celebrity and see the world. Britney never got that chance because we were all learning together.
But Britney was almost treated like a franchise, and maybe that was the being brought up through the Mickey Mouse Club and through Disney, where you see, like, you know, it was a very Disney princess, here's all the merchandise, here's the franchise. Like, I'm surprised there wasn't a Britney Spears world. Like, that was the
There's a Britney Spears theme park now.
Well, there you go. Like, it was a brand. It wasn't ever about a person. And that works great for Disney because they're not real people involved at the center of it. It works really well for Moana and Frozen, where you see the plastic stuff everywhere. But like, we had that level of merchandise and that level of paraphernalia with Britney Spears without ever considering that she was a real person at the heart of it all.
Yep.
But yeah, it's really interesting. And I think that it's interesting to sit now, and obviously Britney Spears still needs a lot of support today. It's interesting to sit back and acknowledge that we were complicit and question what we could have done. We can't change anything about the past. But what I'm interested in is understanding, taking what we've learned now, where are we failing currently in media? Like, because we've never solved everything. In 20 years, there's going to be something we look back on and say, we didn't know at the time.
Yeah. What struck me is, I love that social media has essentially decimated paparazzi culture.
Yeah.
We've taken away the control of the value of that photograph because celebrities own their image and they've got their own platforms. And now it's more disseminated. We're hearing more voices. And I referred a little bit to the echo chamber of, like, mainstream media was the only voice we had. We couldn't hear other people's voices. Britney couldn't hear other people's voices. She had no peer support.
And it's a real homogenous voice when it comes from tabloid media culture. Yeah. Like, they're interchangeable. They're all doing the same thing, saying the same thing, using different angles of the same photograph.
Yeah.
It's not like there are multiple media sources, and that's why it was so dangerous.
Yeah, and it becomes self-perpetuating. The photo of her in a manic episode sold, you know, 100 times more magazines, then that's all we want. And there's no one to challenge that status quo. It's just self-fulfilling. You continue to give what people consume. There's no other voices. Nowadays, when someone's attacked in the media, they have all their peers, all these celebrities pile on to support them on social media. Britney had none of that. Like, all she was hearing was the Diane Sawyers of the world.
Yeah.
The people in the press conferences asking her if she was a virgin, asking her about her boobs, asking. And anyone that was around her, and there's a documentary on YouTube that if you're a Britney fan, you should definitely check out, called Stages. And it's behind the scenes of her 2002 tour. Everyone around her is on her payroll.
Yeah.
So there's no genuine relationship anywhere. It's just so incredibly lonely. So back to your question, now media is disseminated. We've got more voices. We challenge things that we feel are wrong. Sometimes it goes too far, and obviously the whole cancel culture is a highly controversial movement, but sometimes you have to tip the scales a little bit too far in order to find a balance. There was no cancel culture when Diane Sawyer attacked Britney on TV. Now Diane's being held to account on Twitter. She's been very quiet. Justin has now apologized. So we've disseminated media, but you still can't deny that there's something in humanity that craves, you know, the line, if it bleeds, it reads. We like seeing bad things happen to other people on social media. And the word like I use loosely, tentatively.
But there's a voyeuristic culture in some regards. It's, you know, you don't know what's going on behind closed doors, and any snippet you can get into behind a closed door, people do lap it up. And I think that's, you can see that trend is ever present. You know, in 10 years ago, 15 years ago, it was paparazzi culture. It was celebrity culture. It was, you know, Touch Weekly, all those ridiculous publications that we used to consume. And now it's like true crime or, you know, which obviously I have a true crime podcast. I'm not going to diss true crime, but like it's the same level of curiosity about things that are unknown.
Yeah.
And Britney was a total unknown to all of us. It was her, Britney Spears was the most inaccessible thing to us. We saw her every day, but there was no way we could ever understand her, because America was this land of opportunity and stuff that we did not understand, because all we consumed was these American sweetheart TV shows that portrayed it as this amazing thing.
Yeah.
You know, it just seemed like they had so much more opportunity and so much more advanced than we were.
Yeah.
It became so fascinating, but inaccessible. So yeah. Like us sitting down in the burbs of like me down in Knockline and you down in Waterford reading about Britney Spears, and even the fact that we had MTV, it was just the most exciting thing in the world.
And any glimpse that you got, and there's no, fanship has changed. There isn't that same obsession from what I can see that there was back then, because any glimpse or snippet you got, you would have your VHS player and you'd be record. You would know that Britney was going to be on MTV at 10 o'clock and you would record that and write, do not record over this on your video, and analyze that 5 minutes where you saw her eating her lunch. What does she eat? Like, you would analyze. Now we've got ready access to every corner of a celebrity's life and we can see that they're real. And like Britney was almost seen as a fair target back then because we didn't see her as a real person.
No, again, she's a franchise.
Yeah, but now it's like, I think the new cultural endemic is people's self-indulgence on social media.
Completely.
We're all mini celebrities.
Absolutely. Or strive to be mini celebrities. Yeah. And are having probably the same, not the same level of negative mental health impact, but experiencing it a fraction of it. Because it's that idea of, and we've talked about this extensively, it's my favorite thing to talk about on Before Brunch, is the idea of our public selves and private selves, and the disparity between your two selves is what creates unhappiness. The way we behave now has taken the power of celebrity away, because there isn't now this like top of the triangle pinnacle of Britney's, JT's, Madonna's. Like, yes, there are still literally Beyoncé's of the world that are just incredibly talented super celebrities, you know, A-listers. But there are now people rising through this for, you know, celebrity for influence. There is social celebrities. There's the TikTokers. There's the YouTubers. There's normal people rising through the ranks of that. And it is a good thing, because it draws focus away from the people at the top, and it draws focus away. And where we only had Britney Spears to look at, now people's attention is going in, you know, 100 places. And that's good, because we don't, I suppose, there's still like massive fan clubs, and there's like people who are still very, you know, there's the Swifties and there's the Beliebers and all that kind of stuff. But like, I don't think any one person is as geared towards one celebrity or small pool of celebrities as we would have been growing up. Like, I think the fact that it's dispersed is a really, really positive thing and creates a little bit of balance. I think that the idea though that so many people can achieve celebrity status or status of influence is lets everyone believe that they can create that status.
Yeah.
You know, and that I think that that's when people are striving towards that, that's dangerous. I mean, Britney was famous because she was a singer and yeah. she was a good one. And Hit Me Baby One More Time was a good fucking bop. It was a great song.
Yeah.
And then the fame was a consequence of that talent.
Mm.
Whereas now people are striving for fame over talent. Would that be fair?
That's so fair. And I don't want this to come across like we're bashing people, but it is a distraction. This obsession with sharing the best part of ourselves and becoming mini celebrities is a distraction from better work that we could be doing, or yeah. real work.
Actual work.
Actual work. But, you know, kind of taking the lessons that we've clearly learned in the last 20 years and executing on them. Mm. It seems like there's a lot of performative chat online and not a lot of actual action in the background. That's just an observation.
Yeah, it's interesting though, isn't it? Because even we met up this morning, we were catching up and chatting, and we were referencing things that have happened to other people that we've just mutually seen on the internet.
Yeah.
That like we have mutual friends that we can talk about because they've posted something rather than having had a conversation. Yeah. So like we're making ourselves available to people in that way, but not being able to control the conversation, which of course is going to have a negative mental health impact, you know? And like, I know that a lot of people that we are close to, a lot of people I work with would have been, you know, they see online sometimes where other people that they don't know are having conversations about them or their content, and it really upsets them.
Mm.
And it's, I mean, it's part and parcel. If you work in media now, you do have to have a social profile, mm. but it's just, it's that, maybe it's that we've gone too far with it, that instead of it just stopping at the content. I mean, I think both, you know, we're very, I consider both of us to be quite private on
yeah.
online. I mean, I have a social presence, but I'm not posting mm. my life. Maybe because it doesn't stop at the content and you push it further, which sees, you know, you get more followers and you see more engagement. But like, is it necessarily a good thing?
Like, it's definitely going to cannibalize itself in that we're trying to, now we've understood that there's influence on social media, and that if you're known for being great at makeup or great at art, you can influence people and you can monetize that influence.
Yeah.
But we've said before on the podcast that the real celebrities, and the celebrities in Britney's time and 2 decades ago and even a decade ago, they are famous for the things that they were doing when no one was looking.
Yeah.
Leonardo DiCaprio was, you know, doing drama classes and acting classes before there was any internet. But it is inglorious work. And that's the way fame used to be. You would get fame as a consequence or as a symptom of your talent, whether you wanted it or not.
I don't know how that will happen. I'd like to think that that will happen, that we'll once again get to a stage where the people that are revered and have influence are, well, I don't think that any particular people should have influence, but I think that the people who are revered and respected should be those people who are incredibly talented. And it's always within the field of the arts, you know, it's yeah. actors, singers. It's that inaccessible talent that is just so impressive to everyone else, because, you know, everyone mm. wants to be able to sing or dance or whatever. So the ones that can do it are super fucking impressive.
Yeah.
But I think that like for every time I think that we're approaching that, and every time I think we learn a lesson about how we behave on social media or how we treat other people on social media, something else pops up. Mm. So like we obviously, Twitter is known as like the dark place on the internet now because there's so much cancel culture over there. Like it's an echo chamber. It's really,
mm.
it's like the it didn't happen brigade, you know, it's yeah. just a really awful place to be sometimes. Instagram we've kind of known is a bit falsified and has the potential to be heavily filtered and isn't making people feel good about themselves because it's so based on aesthetic. And I thought we were approaching a place where we understood things better. And then we have TikTok. And now TikTok is a new thing where, again, heavily filtered, mm. you know, edited videos. But the fact that people can become so famous so quickly is mm. obviously part of the appeal or whatever. And, you know,
I think it's like we're never going to arrive at a day where we've fixed it all. But
we just turn off the internet and we're like, sorry, we learned our lesson.
But you see, we've actually remarked in this podcast at how social media has solved the tabloid culture problem.
Yeah.
And it's very transient and we're learning all the time. And Justin Timberlake apologized for the way he's treated Britney.
What did you think of the apology?
It's not good enough, but it's a start. And it's very clear that, you know, it's 20 years too late, yes. But it's progress. Justin Timberlake can't apologize. We know this. Last year, when he was photographed drunkenly flirting with one of his co-stars, He publicly apologized to his wife, Jessica Biel, and at the end of the apology included a promo for his new movie. Like, he struggles.
Yeah.
He can't apologize. This time he unflinchingly apologized. It's not good enough, but it's progress.
He reacted to the documentary. He said everything exactly as he had to say in response to that documentary.
Yes.
That boy has not reflected on his behavior.
But this is the beginning of his reflection, in my opinion.
No, this is box ticked for JT.
It can't, no.
He said, I'm sorry.
I'll fight with you on that, because the tone of that apology was, yes, this is what I have to say now. I've been a bold boy. This is how I can apologize. But I found it to be open-ended, and I felt that he was insinuating that he is embarking on a journey, not that he is closing this off and saying, it's all done and dusted, I'm sorry, that's the end, let's move on. It was more like, I'm going to look at this. Maybe I'm being too...
I think you're being too hopeful, and I think for... And this is, I'd probably be shot down for saying this, but we have seen some really pivotal political movements over the last year, 2 years, where people have come out, vowed to do better, and we're not seeing better.
No, and that's, he needs to be accountable to this now. And look, yeah. I hope that Justin will continue to answer questions about this, but we have to at least acknowledge that it's progress. Even if he's doing it under duress, he now understands that his behavior is not acceptable. At the time, he was only validated for the things he did. His solo career was launched off the back of it. What happened with Janet Jackson, we all know he was part of a Super Bowl performance where he stripped her top off, hashtag Nipplegate. He was unscathed. Her career ended.
Yeah.
He never had to apologize. And he was part of the ecosystem that where that behavior was accepted.
Yeah. And it's not just that he did these things or was part of these things, like the snippet in the documentary where an interviewer asked him, did he sleep with Britney Spears, which was so detrimental to the image that had been either created or it was just, you know, true of her. And he said that they had, like, it's the laughing. It's and again, with the not acknowledging that he was part of Nipplegate. He was just like, oh, it was an accident. No big deal. It was that kind of apathetic sort of brushing it off. That's offensive. Now, yeah. I think that we will see a change in that culture to now, we will see a change in how men are rewarded for that kind of behavior, purely because the people at the helm, the people in editorial positions, the people in power now are not just other men. They're not just other white men who sit around and laugh. There's still an awful lot of work that has to be done, but maybe it's because we all have access to social media more now, but we can hold powerful men accountable. And that's what we've seen with things like the Me Too movement. That's what we've seen here in Ireland with Repeal the Eighth. We know that women are a powerful force, and that has changed the way that men behave and how men are rewarded. It's interesting that across with the Framing Britney doc, and actually closer to home with our own work here, that we've seen misogyny pointed out as the reason that things happened to women. You know, so like it's not as literal in Framing Britney Spears, but they're definitely presenting a misogynistic culture as the reason that this woman was treated so badly and poorly. It's male interviewers talking to her about the size of her breasts. It's stuff that we can recognize now that we didn't at the time, and not just because of aging, but because we have a greater awareness for it. So someone, even though I was maybe 15, 16 when I was watching that, I know that a 15 or 16 year old girl now will look at that and say, that's misogynistic. You know, that's sexist. That's bad behavior.
Yeah.
At the time I was like, did she get a boob job? You know, and it may be in part to my own ignorance, but that was the culture that we grew up in. That was what, you know, that's what we were absorbing all the time.
Yeah.
So I think that is positive, that we will not have that same culture ever again.
No, and that's it. Whether Justin has internalized what he's done or not, he knows it's not acceptable.
Yeah.
At the time, he was a symptom of the culture, not necessarily a cause. He contributed to the cause, and it's self-perpetuating. But he was a symptom of the belief system. We can imagine what happened after that interview where he laughs about sleeping with Britney Spears. The interview goes viral. His PR people are delighted. His manager claps him on the back. The radio gets, you know, a whole new listenership, audience extension, money made. Everyone's happy. at the expense of Britney Spears.
Yeah.
But Justin's validated. That has changed. And you're exactly right. A 15-year-old now sees that. And even the act of discussing these things and the act of debate on social media allows people to think more critically. Like, we weren't equipped to think critically back then.
No.
We didn't have the experience or the depth or wide range of opinions to challenge our thoughts. We were just shaped by what we heard and saw.
And it is interesting, because I usually hate the defense of, oh, well, I didn't know at the time. I didn't know. And I think the onus is obviously on, the onus a lot of the time is on people to educate yourselves and understand things. And that I would like to think that if I was impacted, you know, if I was around when bad things were happening, that I'd be able to spot them and point them out.
Mm.
But the thing is, we did grow up in an echo chamber. We grew up in what is now known as like a filter bubble, where we only had access to the tabloids, the media we consumed, the kind of, you know, Cosmos and female orientated girls magazines of the day are completely different to what they are now. I mean, we were given magazines that were 15 ways to please your lover. It was all about how a woman performs to please a man.
Yeah.
We didn't have, it certainly there wasn't that like ever present diverse culture. It was a very heteronormative, very white, very cis world. And all of the content we consumed was about that. So whether we agreed with it or not, we bought into it because that was the way we felt part of something, or the way we didn't feel outsiders. So there wasn't that culture of critical thinking or questioning or examining it. And there certainly, because there wasn't the culture of examining that behavior, there definitely wasn't the culture of examining our own behavior, which I think there is now.
100%. And even if we still, you know, when I saw that Mary Kate Olsen's divorce happened on Zoom and there was photos online and she looked upset in it, or I googled it and I wanted to see it, but now there's a level of awareness of, why am I googling this? Why is this what I want? And you can only hope that that will continue to progress to a point where we can say, do you know what, I don't need to see that, or I don't need to search this and validate the clickbait article. And so it's all progress and it's all transient. There will be no moment where we arrive at, you know, utopia. But what framing Britney Spears really made me feel was that there is progress happening.
Definitely.
It was clarity, and it's the first time that you can really look back and be confronted with how different things are now.
Yeah, I think that you can see the progress is evident from the fact that the old pillars of media are not working anymore. Like, print is not selling. Newspapers are getting thinner. There's less magazines on the shelves. Even the clickbaity websites that were popular 5, 6, 7 years ago are failing now. People are looking for better, more insightful, in-depth content. And that in itself is means that people are questioning and debating things a little bit more, which is exciting. I do still think that there's going to be things that we talk about in 20 years that are happening now that we are not aware of. I think, you know, like we were saying there, I think that the reactions and the lack of accountability after the Black Lives Matter movement is still a crying shame, and I think that there's more work to be done, but at least we're cognizant of it, and at least we're trying, I think.
Yeah. So, speaking of creating personas and the disconnect between your private and public self, next week, we're going to do a deep dive on the Anna Delvey story. There's an essay in The Cut called How Anna Delvey Tricked New York's Party People. And I recommend that as a starting place if you don't know the story. But it's definitely her story encapsulates the whole idea of creating these alternate universes, alternate realities. It's like WandaVision style, if you're watching WandaVision. Are you watching?
No, I haven't. Is it good?
It's so good. You need to watch it. But it's creating an alternate reality and what that means for your relationships and society in general, and the children.
Always think of the children.
Thanks.
It felt good to be back. All right. You want to leave?
We're a little bit rusty.
Bye. No, it felt good to be back. I was worried that we wouldn't get back into the flow of it, but I think we did. Although there are probably loads of comments underneath this and social media being like, no one asked for your return. Not one person. But we can attest there was one.
Thank you, Lisa. for the endless support
just for you.
Bye.